Eating had become a habit. He clicked his knuckles nervously.
A holy war, he said.
That was safe enough. The sentence included no verbal clue to what Fryett thought about the prospect. He hadn't said, "Ye God, not a damn holy war, is the man insane?" Some idiot missionary gets himself killed, some man writes some gibberish about the shape of the world, and we have to go to war? If pressed, and indeed stretched and broken, he could always claim that his meaning had been, "At last, a not-to-be-missed opportunity to die gloriously for Om, the one true God, who shall trample the unrighteous with hooves of iron." It wouldn't make a lot of difference. Evidence never did, once you were in the deep levels where accusation had the status of proof. But at least it might leave one or two inquisitors feeling that they might just have been wrong.
Of course, the Church has been far less militant in the last century or so, said Druna, looking out over the desert, much taken up with the mundane problems of the Empire.
A statement, not a crack in it where you could insert a bone disjointer.
There was the crusade against the Hodgsonites, said Fryett, distantly, and the subjugation of the Melchiorites, and the resolving of the false prophet Zeb, and the correction of the Achelians, and the shriving of the...
But that was all just politics, said Druna.
Yes. Yes, of course, you are right.
And, of course, no one could possibly doubt the wisdom of a war to further the worship and glory of the great God.
No,
none could doubt it, said Fryett, who had walked across many a battlefield the day after a glorious victory, when you had ample opportunity to see what winning meant. The Omnians forbade the use of all drugs. At times like that, the prohibition bit hard, when you dared not go to sleep for fear of your dreams.
Did not the great God declare, through the prophet Abbas, that there is no greater and more honourable sacrifice than one's own life for the God?
Indeed he did, said Fryett.
He couldn't help recalling that Abbas had been a bishop in the citadel for 50 years before the great God had chosen him. Screaming enemies had never come at him with a sword. He'd never looked into the eyes of someone who wished him dead. Now, of course he had, all the time, because of course the Church had its politics, but at least they hadn't been holding the means to that end in their hands at the time.
To die gloriously for one's faith is a noble thing, Druna intoned, as if reading the words off an internal notice board.
So the prophets tell us, said Fryett miserably.
The great God moved in mysterious ways, he knew. Undoubtedly he chose his prophets, but it seemed as if he had to be helped. Perhaps he was too busy to choose for himself. There seemed to be a lot more meetings, a lot more nodding, a lot more exchanging of glances, even during the services in the great temple. Certainly there was a glow about young Vorbis. How easy it was to slip from one thought to the other. There was a man touched by destiny. A tiny part of Fryett, the part that had lived for much of its life in tents, had been shot at quite a lot, and had been in the middle of melees where you could just as easily be killed by an ally as an enemy, added, or at least by something. It was a part of him that was due to spend all the eternities in all the hells, but it had already had a lot of practice.
"You know, I travelled a lot when I was much younger," he said.
"I have often heard you talk, most interestingly, of your travels in heathen lands," said Druna politely. "Often bells are mentioned."
"Did I ever tell you about the Brown Islands?"
"Out beyond the end of the world," said Druna, "I remember, where bread grows on trees and young women find little white balls in oysters. They dive for them, you said, while wearing not a stitch."
"Is something else I remember," said Fryett.
It was a lonely memory, out here with nothing but scrubland under a purple sky.
"The sea is strong there. There are big waves, much bigger than the ones in the Circle Sea, you understand, and the men paddle out beyond them to fish, on strange planks of wood, and when they wish to return to shore, they wait for a wave, and then they stand up on the wave, and it carries them all the way to the beach."
"I like the story about the young swimming women best," said Druna.
"Sometimes there are very big waves," said Fryett, ignoring him. "Nothing would stop them. But if you ride them,